you love your job? Lucky you. But even if you don't, maybe don't worry about it too much. Maybe your job is good enough. Pursuing the dream job and the idealized career sounds great, but there's a downside too. According to Simone Stolzoff, author of the new book, The Good Enough Job, Reclaiming Life from Work. Simone is a journalist and consultant who's written for The Atlantic, Wired, the San Francisco Chronicle, and other publications. Our curator, Adam Grant, says his new book is a wake-up call for people who feel overworked and leaders who have lost sight of their humanity. Here's Simone to share five of his big ideas.
Hi, this is author Simone Stolzoff, and I'm going to share five insights from my debut book, The Good Enough Job, Reclaiming Life from Work. The book is an investigation into how work has become so central to our lives, and a call to diversify the sources of meaning in our life beyond what we do. Insight one, finding intrinsic motivation tends to be more fulfilling than extrinsic motivation. One of the most famous psychological experiments on motivation, researchers observed how students at a local preschool spent their free time. After identifying which kids chose drawing as their free time activity, they divided the young artists into three groups. One group of students was shown a Good Player Award, a certificate with a gold star, red ribbon, and the student's name. The researchers told the students in this group that if they drew, they would receive an award. Group two wasn't shown an award, but if the students chose to draw, they were given one at the end of the session. Group three was not shown or given any awards. 2 weeks after the experiment, the researchers returned to the classroom to observe the students again. The students in groups two and three drew just as much after the experiment as they did before. But students in the first group, those who expected to receive an award after drawing, now spent less time drawing than they did before the experiment. It wasn't the presence of the award, but the expectation of receiving it that dampened the students' interest in drawing. The researchers concluded that internal satisfaction from an activity may decrease when the promise of an external reward looms. The experiment has since been replicated many times with other groups of students and adults, yielding similar results. The career implications from this experiment are straightforward. Working for intrinsic validation alone, like a high salary, a fancy title, or the adult equivalent of a Good Player Award, is less sustainable than pursuing work you enjoy. The experiment proved something we all intuitively know. Working exclusively for external rewards rarely brings lasting fulfillment. As the old saying goes, how much money is enough, Mr. Rockefeller? Just a little bit more. Insight two, valuing time tends to be more fulfilling than valuing money. In the mid-1970s, the average American, German, and French worker all worked roughly the same amount of hours per year. In the developed world, average working hours had fallen for most of the 20th century thanks to technological advancements and labor organizing and increases in wealth. Historically, the richer a person or a country become, the less they work because, well, they can afford not to. But in the mid-1970s, a strange trend occurred. In the US, while the average worker's hours in our peer nations continued to decline, the average American's working hours flatlined, and some American workers, namely college-educated men, started to work more than ever. Explaining this trend is another essay entirely, but suffice it to say that rather than trade wealth for more free time, as was customary for most of history, American elites started trading their free time for more work. It's well documented that increasing your wealth can lead to more happiness to a point. But once our basic needs are accounted for, a growing body of research has proven that prioritizing time outweighs prioritizing wealth. And thinking about work's role in your life, especially if you're relatively well off, it's worth considering that valuing more free time over more money tends to be more fulfilling and lead to higher overall well-being. Insight three, satisficing tends to be more fulfilling than maximizing. Imagine you're buying a sweater. You find one that fits well and looks good for a fair price. If you're what social scientists call a maximizer, you might ask the clerk to put the sweater on hold so you can spend the rest of the day going to other stores to ensure there isn't a better sweater out there. On the other hand, if you're a so-called satisficer, which is a portmanteau of satisfy and suffice, you'll likely feel all right about buying the first sweater and move on with your day. A satisficer determines their criteria, and once they find something that meets their standards, they stop searching. Whereas maximizers want to be sure that every decision is the best decision they could possibly make. In the words of psychologist Lori Gottlieb, the satisficer is the one who wants what she has, and the maximizer is the one who is always chasing, trying to have what she wants. While there are benefits and drawbacks to each approach, the research says that satisficers tend to be happier. Even if the maximizer exhausts all the other options and returns to the store to buy the original sweater, they tend to be less fulfilled than the satisficer who bought the sweater right away. From a work perspective, many of us have internalized the message that there's one dream job out there, and we shouldn't stop or settle until we find it. We tweak our resumes and browse LinkedIn in the hopes our next role will help us self-actualize. But perhaps a satisficer approach, where we first determine what matters to us and then recognize when we have it, is actually a better recipe for happiness. Insight 4. Define what good enough means to you. I named my book The Good Enough Job as a nod to the satisficer approach to job seeking. Compared to the perfect job or dream job, good enough is a more forgiving ideal. It doesn't idealize what a job can offer, nor accept that work must be endless toil. Fundamentally, good enough is an invitation to choose what sufficiency means to you. Perhaps it's a job that pays a certain wage, gets off at a certain hour, or gives you the time and energy to do what you love when you're not working. The title is also an allusion to a theory that was devised by a British psychologist and pediatrician named Donald Winnicott. In the mid-20th century, Winnicott was observing this growing idolization of parenting, where these parents wanted to be perfect and shield their kids from experiencing any sort of negative emotion. And then, when the kid inevitably felt frustrated or angry or sad, the parents took it personally. As an alternative, Winnicott proposed the idea of the good enough parent and believed that through this approach that valued sufficiency, it would be better for both the child and the parent. The child would learn how to self-soothe, and then the parent wouldn't get lost in their children's emotions. So the good enough job is taking Winnicott's approach and applying it to our working lives. I've observed a growing idolization of work where people are thinking they should keep searching until they find that vocational soulmate, a dream job that will never be frustrating or make them sad. But in actuality, an approach that thinks about what good enough means and then thinks about job as a part of, but not the entirety of who we are, is bound to lead to a more well-rounded and fulfilling life. Lastly, insight number 5, diversify your identity beyond work. If you treat work as the primary source of meaning, identity, community, and purpose in your life, it's a perilous game. It's as if you're balancing on a narrow platform, prone to be blown over from a strong gust of wind. We've particularly seen this recently in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic and layoffs and furloughs across many different industries and sectors. There are a few risks to this approach. If you treat your job as your primary source of identity and you lose your job, what's left? It also creates massive expectations about what a job can deliver. But the one I want to focus on here is the fact that when we live a work-centric existence, we can neglect other parts of who we are. When we are working all the time, it doesn't just take our best hours, but often our best energy too. And so my last piece of advice is to carve out time to do things other than work and fill that time with active forms of leisure. It may sound obvious, but if you want to create meaning in your life, it requires time and energy. You have to actually do things other than work. These active forms of leisure can take many forms. It can be investing in your relationships by, for example, setting up a weekly breakfast date with your best friend. It can be finding a hobby that you don't have to monetize or become an expert at, but it's just because the activity itself brings you joy. Or it can be finding a community through a means of exercise or a community or political or neighborhood group where an identity beyond who you are in the office is reinforced. Thank you.
Thank you, Simone. That was Simone Stolzoff with 5 big ideas from The Good Enough Job, Reclaiming Life from Work. Also, check out our book bite for Work Won't Love You Back, How Devotion to Our Jobs Keeps Us Exploited, Exhausted, and Alone by Sarah Jaffe. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.